You know that moment when a kid first learns to ride a bike? Like the parent is running alongside them, right?
Yeah.
One hand gripping the handlebars, the other holding tight to the back of the seat.
Oh yeah. And then comes that terrifying split second where the parent just they just have to let go.
Exactly. They just have
Yeah.
to trust the balance. And I mean, for any parent, that physical letting go is a massive psychological hurdle.
Right, because the stakes in that moment are purely about physics, you know, gravity.
Yeah. But when we look at parents of autistic children, the act of letting go, like to allow for independence, it just carries a vastly different weight. The instinct to protect goes into absolute overdrive.
It really does. Because the environment they're releasing their child into, the physical and social world, it's fundamentally not designed for neurodivergent minds.
Which brings us to today's topic. Welcome to the deep dive, everyone. Whether you're a parent, an educator, or just someone fascinated by human development and how we learn, you are definitely in the right place. Today, we are looking at a framework for bridging that terrifying gap between constant supervision and, well, true independence. We're drawing on a June 30, 2026 article from AngelSense.
Right, and the piece is titled, How to Help Your Autistic Child Gain Independence This Summer.
Yeah. And the mission of this deep dive is to extract practical step-by-step strategies for empowering children with autism to gain independence while, safely managing the very natural worries that parents face.
And setting the stage here, the core premise from the text is that risk development is vital for all children.
All children, yeah.
Exactly. Despite the challenges, autistic children crave the satisfaction of independence just as much as anyone else. And summer, when kids are home from school, is really the perfect incubator for this growth.
Right, because the rigid architecture of the school year is paused, the nervous system gets a chance to reset.
Which is huge.
Okay, let's unpack this because the source explicitly states we need to start at home. And I like to think of this as playing a video game in a sandbox mode.
Oh, sandbox mode. I like
Yeah,
that.
right. Like it's a safe, controlled environment where the stakes are super low, no enemies, unlimited resources, you just tinker. But even in the safety of the house, how do parents even know which skills to tackle first without completely overwhelming the child?
Well, the article anchors this in identifying what the child is already interested in. Like, what do they already feel safe doing?
Okay, so following their lead.
Exactly. There's this really fascinating example from the text. If a child finds water soothing, maybe they love the sensory input of it, a parent can leverage that natural comfort.
Oh, wow. So you use the water to teach them something new.
Right. Use it to teach them, say, to wash dishes or to bathe themselves.
That's brilliant.
It is, because starting in a familiar setting with a comforting element eases anxieties. It ensures the child is developmentally ready before you add any complexity.
Because if you're trying to teach them, I don't know, folding laundry, but they hate the texture of the fabric, you're fighting a losing battle.
Oh, totally. Their cognitive load is maxed out before you even start. You have to work with their nervous system, not against it.
Okay, so we're in sandbox mode. The environment is safe. We're using their interests. The conversation naturally shifts to the actual mechanics of teaching a new skill, right? Setting goals.
Yeah, and the rule here from the text is to start small, very small.
Like, how small are we talking?
Well, you have to determine where the parent lends a hand and where the child takes over. The source uses this great lunch-making spectrum to illustrate
Yeah,
this.
lunch-making spectrum. Okay, I'm listening.
So, on the advanced end, a skill could be as complex as heating canned soup on the stove.
Yeah.
But on the beginner end, it might just be making a peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
Okay, I have to push back here a little bit on behalf of the listener.
Go for it.
What if making an entire PB&J sandwich is still just too monumental a task, like locating the bread, dealing with the sticky jelly, using a knife? How do you prevent the child and the parent, honestly, from feeling like they just totally failed if it ends in a meltdown?
That's such a valid point, and the text addresses this by introducing the concept of long-term adjustable goals.
Adjustable goals.
Yeah. The goal isn't necessarily the whole sandwich by the end of the summer.
Wait, really? Then what's the goal?
Well, a massive accomplishment might just be the child learning where the pantry items are stored,
Oh, I see.
or successfully pointing to the cupboard with the plates, or independently finding the bread. The text even notes that just understanding the steps of making a sandwich in story form is a huge win.
So redefining what success looks like.
Exactly. The golden rule here is that the goal is to promote individual success, not a fear of failure.
And I imagine visuals play a big part in breaking down those steps,
Oh,
right?
absolutely. The text highlights using visuals to bypass the bottleneck of working memory. It's crucial.
Right, because if you say, get the bread, open the jar, spread the jelly, that auditory information just kind of evaporates.
Exactly. Visuals make it permanent.
Okay, so we're celebrating the small stuff, we're using visuals, but here's where it gets really interesting. Because the text brings up this caveat about changing context. And it makes me think of teaching a teenager to drive.
Oh, yeah. The parking lot versus the highway.
Yes. It's like a teenager learning to drive perfectly in an empty parking lot. They maneuver the turn signal. They brake smoothly. But the second you put them on a real highway, it feels like they've never been behind the wheel in their life.
That is the perfect analogy. And the text has a specific example for this, which they call the library phenomenon.
The library phenomenon? What is that?
Well, imagine you teach an autistic child to independently check out a book at one specific library. They master it.
Okay.
But then you take them to a different library in the next town over, and it pulls them all the way back to step one. They freeze.
Oh, man. For a parent, that probably feels like a devastating regression, like all that hard work just vanished.
It does feel that way. But unpacking why this matters for the listener is so important. Changing the context often means changing the task entirely for an autistic child.
Wait, really? Changing the task entirely?
Yeah, because they process environments from the bottom up. Library A has a specific smell, specific lighting. The desk is three bases from the door.
Right.
But Library B has tile floors, different lights, and the desk is in the corner. To them, it's not a variation of a library. It's an alien ecosystem.
Wow. So none of the data from Library A applies.
Exactly. But the text is very reassuring about this. This regression is completely okay. It isn't a failure.
It's an opportunity.
Right. It's an opportunity to expand the child's ability to manage unexpected challenges. You just pull out the visual schedules again and start at step one for Library B.
Rebuild the map. I love that. So we've mastered skills inside the home, and we understand how context shifts affect the child. The final step outlined in the source is stepping outside the home, which is daunting.
Extremely daunting. Testing the waters, letting a child play independently outside or walk to a nearby park, creates this immense tension for parents.
Because of the safety aspect?
Yes. It's this delicate balance between a child's natural desire to do things on their own and the parent's absolute need to ensure their safety, especially with the severe risks of wandering or elopement.
So what does this all mean for the parent who is just terrified of letting go? How do they actually do it?
This is where the text introduces a technological solution. Angel Sense.
Angel Sense. I've heard of this. It's a GPS tracker, right?
It is, but it's much more than just a standard tracker. It's a groundbreaking AI-based assistive technology specifically designed for individuals with special needs.
How does the AI part work?
Well, it acts as a wandering prevention device. It actively learns the wearer's daily routines.
Oh, so it's proactive.
Exactly. It maps their normal transit times and usual locations.
Right.
So if a child deviates from a route, the AI detects the anomaly and pushes an alert to the parent.
That's incredible, because checking a dot on a map after you realize they're missing, I mean, that's entirely reactive. By then, it's an emergency.
Right. And Angel Sense offers peace of mind. It allows parents to stay connected with their loved ones while empowering the child to experience a higher level of independence safely.
It effectively shifts the burden of hypervigilance from the parent to the technology.
Mm.
And when the parent exhales, the child feels that right. They can confidently practice their independence without absorbing the parent's panic.
Precisely. It creates a closed loop of confidence for both of them.
That is just so powerful. Well, as we wrap up this deep dive, let's summarize the journey we've been on.
Yeah, it's been quite a path.
We started by identifying comforting interests at home, like soothing water, to bypass cognitive overload.
Right, sandbox mode.
Exactly. Then we looked at breaking down tasks, like the PB&J sandwich on the lunch-making spectrum.
Celebrating the micro goals.
Yes. And from there, we explored the massive hurdle of context shifts the library phenomenon and how to reframe that. And finally, using tools like AI assistive tech, like Angel Sense, to safely explore the outside world.
And, you know, for the listener, this framework, starting small, using visuals, adjusting goals to avoid that fear of failure, and embracing the learning curve of unexpected challenges, it's really a masterclass in patience and skill building.
It really is. Anyone can appreciate that, regardless of neurotype. Which actually brings me to a final thought I want to leave you with today. Something to mull over.
Ooh, I'm intrigued.
So we discussed how, for an autistic child, changing the physical context, like going to a new library, completely resets the task. The ecosystem changed, so the brain has to start over.
Right. bottom-up processing.
But what if we applied this lens to our own adult lives?
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. The next time you find yourself, or maybe a colleague, struggling to apply a perfectly mastered skill in a brand new job, or you're fumbling in a new relationship.
That's a really good point.
Consider that maybe you haven't forgotten how to do the task. Maybe you haven't lost your edge. Maybe the context just changed.
You're just in a new ecosystem.
Exactly. The sensory inputs are different, the social rules shifted, and you just need the grace to let go of the expectation of instant mastery and proudly start again at step one.
That is a phenomenal way to look at it. Grace for the context shift.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for joining us on this deep dive. We will catch you next time.